It's time to talk education. Catherine Taylor is from Turning Point Consulting, a former school teacher, and is so interested in the way, at this time of year particularly, navigating the return to school. It's not an easy task. Catherine, thanks for joining us on Australia Overnight.
Pleasure. Good to speak with you.
Catherine, it is a bit of a task. You know, there are lots of kids who, after a few weeks' holiday, they've been at home with mum and dad. They might have been away. Some go overseas these days for their long break. Mm-hmm. Are they excited about going back to school?
Look, I think there's a variety of responses that we get when we're looking at that moving back into school. Some people come back to it with absolute excitement that they've been missing all their friends, they've been missing that social element, and other people come with dread that they're fearful of what they don't know and what they potentially won't be prepared for.
Yes, I suppose, you know, going into a new grade, and perhaps you mightn't have done as well as you hoped you were going to do in you know, grade 3 or grade 4, and then suddenly grade 5 is there. And I guess there'll be a lot of kids who don't have all the confidence required.
Absolutely. And also the unknown of who is my teacher. A lot of the schools now delay knowing who your teacher is until you come back in the new year. So for a lot of children, that causes massive stress in terms of what if I don't like them or what if they don't like me?
Yeah.
So how can I possibly cope with what I don't know about? And particularly between those years, as you say, there's different stages and phases. So going from year 7 or 8 into 9 or 10 is quite a big gap, just the same as going from primary into high school, because the expectations vary so much.
Well, you know, I know from personal experience, being a 12-year-old and suddenly going out of a primary school where I guess the education was okay, and suddenly landing in Form 1 in high school, and they say, guess what you're learning this year, Alan? You're learning French. God save us.
That's exactly right. And you're sitting there going, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Well, that's
and
right.
For children now, it's also the assessment. It's not just the topic, but now I'm going to assess you on it. So I'm giving you this, you know, 2-3-4-page document, and that's what I'm going to mark you against. So it really is, for a lot of children, and particularly if their parents had bad or fearful experiences at school, there is a lot of anxiety around the whole move. So it is how we approach it is massive in terms of how our children will embrace that school transition, not only across the years, but across different schools. We've got a lot more children moving around as well, whether it's Defence Force or just relocating. A lot more children are moving schools throughout their years as well.
On an average, how many schools would a youngster go to during his education?
Well, it varies. We see some children who go from K to 12 in the one school, not the bulk of them, but we do see some that do that, whereas we find most schools swap between primary and high. Across the different schools, it's fairly common to see one or two schools. But there are some children where we see sort of 5 and 6 high schools alone.
Can that be a good thing for a kid, or is that unsettling?
I think it depends on the child and it depends on the reasoning as well. So for we work with a lot of the Defence Force and a lot of the children that do move around due to the family dynamics. And for them, it's quite normal. So they see that as normal life. They don't see it as a problem because they're anticipating it when they start at school. For children who are moving because of different reasons, a lot of children are getting moved because the parents aren't happy with the school or because they're not feeling they're succeeding as such. And so if you continue to move the child, there's not necessarily a continuation of learning or really other people getting to know them at that deeper level. So you do need the school to understand your child, but you also need to give them time because these things don't happen overnight.
But it must be terribly hard also for a school and teachers, a principal who has a parent come up and say, look, I'm just not happy with the way my boy is progressing at your school. What are you doing wrong? Where, you know, how do you find that way of getting over that problem?
Precise. And that's a really, really common outcome. And certainly at parent teachers, a lot of people will go in and say, I'm not happy. You've not given them the right marks. They should be getting more. You know, my child's smarter than this, all of these sorts of things. So I think the most important thing to remember is it is a partnership. It is a journey where your child, you and the school are together. So unless we are sharing information with the school, and that's everything from the personal circumstances that may be happening in their world through to the challenges that they're having in their learning, the schools can't actually help. So I find that is actually a really difficult thing schools face, and many of the teachers find it very confronting and are not necessarily equipped to respond to that sort of question or, you know, forceful sort of demand. Principals are very, very good at it, but that's because that's what they will do for the main part. So I think it is, first of all, I think we need to consider how we approach it And secondly, I think we need to think about, well, what is our objective? Because I know I've had people come up to me and say, well, my child should be doing better. They should be going to uni doing this, this, and this. And I'll be saying, well, let's talk to your child. Let's understand who they are. Is that really the path for them? And through the conversations, the parents at the end will nine times out of ten turn around and say, well, no, that's not where they're going to thrive. But because of what we're seeing as success for our child, we're not always balanced in how we're presenting it.
I come from a family of school teachers. I'm the one who chose not to be a school teacher. Would I have been a good one or not? Possibly, but possibly not. Who knows? But I do know that in recent times, the members of my family who are still teachers, sometimes during the long break over December, January, that they do a fair bit of personal tutoring.
Oh, absolutely. And there's a misconception. Teachers don't actually get all the holidays that we think they do. The teachers that I work with are working through the holiday period on all their class preparation, on their programming, on reviewing different learning styles, on a lot of professional development. So there's not that gap that we see. The personal tutoring back to students, I'm seeing more teachers starting to take on board as well. And they're doing it in their own private time, just to try and help to reduce that gap.
Yes, indeed. And I suppose, you know, year-on-year curriculums change, don't they? And that's going to be taken on board and assessed and how the teachers are going to present it to their students.
Absolutely. And it is keeping things fresh as well. I know with my daughters, one of my daughters did exactly the same exam assessment as my daughter had done 6 years prior. And I remember thinking, well, that can't be exciting for anybody to do exactly the same work in class and the same project cannot keep you, you know, revitalised. And I think the changes in technology and the use of apps and all other aspects within the classroom now are moving so quickly that teachers are actually excited. Some are fearful, but for the most part, they're excited by what they can do differently and new to keep it fresh for the students as well as for themselves.
It's pretty important, isn't it, that the teachers are on top of all this new technology that's coming to pass.
Absolutely, and not losing time in confusion. So we can't be great at everything. So if I'm an expert in geography, that doesn't mean I'm going to be a wonderful techno whiz, but I have to be able to use aspects of it to liven up that classroom experience. The reverse of that, though, is that a lot of students are wanting the live teaching the whole time, very animated, engaged teaching the whole time, whereas some of it is just head down reading, research, regurgitating times tables, for example. Some of it we just have to try to relearn in different ways.
Yeah, do children at school still learn times table? You know, 12 12s or 144, do they still do that sort of stuff?
Absolutely.
Yeah?
It's your foundation for a lot of other mathematical concepts. So unless we get the basis of them, we can't build on to the others. There's a lot more use of music with times tables. There's a lot of online programs that they use that just come up with pop-ups to try and get them to find different things. And for those children where they have a lower numeracy capability, there's a lot of apps that will take them through at a different pace. So there's some really, really good tools out there that are being used for that.
Catherine, it's been years and years since I walked into a school, and I'm in a lot of years. But in the primary school room these days, are there lots of computers, or does that sort of happen in high school?
Schools are different. There's a very big range of how schools are approaching it. So for primary schools, a lot of the primary schools are doing bring your own app, okay, bring your own device, rather. So bringing an iPad, for example, or a phone, smartphone, something like that in the later years. But most of those schools will have either computers and or iPads in class sets that they can take around. By the time you get to high school, it really is students bringing their own iPad or laptop to be able to do their work on. There isn't, I remember when I was at school and computers started coming in just as I was leaving, and there was this computer room that was the unknown zone that you weren't allowed in unless the teacher was there. It's not really like that anymore. It's very much integrated into the classroom.
So just quickly, that navigating your way from primary school into high school, and like I said, I found it quite daunting. And I've got to say, for a couple of years in high school, I just didn't get it. It took me actually to fail in high school once to actually get it the next time when I had to go back and repeat a year. But are there many kids like me who just don't get it?
Absolutely. Failing is not a bad thing, though. We've actually got a bit of a problem where children are afraid to fail now. So in sports carnivals and in homework and various other aspects, children are quite fearful of failing, whereas there's so much to be learned from failing. As you rightly say, that's when you went, oh, I've probably got to do something different here.
Yes.
So that's our wake-up call to ourselves. So we all grow at our own level. I think that the difference is that how resilient or confident am I to fail, to be able to move forward. So it's that allowing children to reflect and to be able to see forward. I find most of the kids who go over into Year 7 that we work with are really still quite young, and they're not aware of themselves. They've not got the responsibility or the ability to organise multitask. A lot of the adults I work with don't have the multi-skills, you know. So it's things that we do need to build that ability within. So parents, we can do building blocks of that when they're in the late years of primary, but once they get to high school, we need to support but not do things for them. So we're giving them that framework to really grow and develop themselves in those skills, because they're the lifelong skills.
There are plenty of reports going around that the education system in this country is not what it should be, that we are going way down the list when it comes to education. How do you see it?
Look, I
when it comes to literacy and numeracy.
Yeah, in terms, because I was about to say, it depends on what you're actually measuring. And I'm not a big one on measuring numeracy and literacy in isolation. I actually think we should be measuring students in terms of their confidence and their conviction in applying things. So, for example, I work with a lot of students who are leaving school because they don't fit, as it were, into the school system, and they're poor in terms of their numeracy and their literacy. However, we put them in a practical environment and they are amazing. They are the best plumbers or electricians or tradies in some form, or hairdressers or beauticians, a whole range of different things. So what we're measuring them against is one of those aspects. But I think there is a very high expectation on teachers in terms of the curriculum, and so students. And so the gap in terms of that global expectation is actually shifting. What we're seeing overseas in the countries that are doing very, very well in those results, they're actually focusing on building personal skills, building self-esteem, building confidence, building understanding of myself and how I work and what my strengths are before I build in those learning aspects. So Japan, Finland, a whole range of different countries, they come back to those basics of me before they start to teach those other aspects. And I think that's something that we're trying to do, but the curriculum is so dense that schools are struggling to fit it in a quality manner.
Yeah. Catherine, I think you've got a book in you.
Yes.
What's it called?
No, I don't actually have a book as yet. Not yet.
You probably do have a book in you, though. Catherine, tell us about Turning Point Consulting.
Yes, thank you very much.
Tell us about it.
Oh, I'll tell you. Sorry. Yeah. Turning Point Consulting, we work with basically students through to individuals, helping them on their journey. So very much around strengths and personal awareness. So we work with primary schools, helping to do bullying prevention and resilience programs through to leadership, and high school with a lot of those transition tools, as we've been talking about, but also transition beyond school. So how do I really understand who I am and where I'm going beyond that? So career tools, interview, resume, scholarship, university, or future pathways.
Great.
And then working with staff within schools to support that journey with schools.
Catherine, do you have a website?
I do, turningpointconsulting.com.au.
I must check it out and have a look at it sometime. Catherine, been terrific talking with you about education and navigating the return to school. Thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure. Thank you, Alan.